Gretchen Reynolds is a sports writer and runner. She covers the latest in exercise science and writes about what she finds for the New York Times Magazine's Phys Ed column. Today, researchers are digging deep into the world of exercise physiology and busting more than a few myths along the way. For instance, everybody knows running is tough on your knees, right?
As a fellow somewhat aging athlete, I am very happy to report that that is not true. There is,
really?
In fact, very good evidence that running under certain circumstances is actually quite healthy for your knees. It may even be protective against arthritis. I say that and I can hear the people saying, I know lots of people with achy knees who run. And the caveat is, if you have never injured your knee, particularly if you've never torn an ACL or in other ways changed the stability of your knee, then you can probably run into your 90s with no problem. The knee is made to be run on. It's made to be walked on. And in fact, walking and running on your knee will in fact generally make the cartilage in your knee somewhat healthier.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's that wearing away of the cartilage that I've read most about. I think that people are concerned, especially that excessive running can cause damage. And you're saying that's the research seems to show that's exactly the opposite, unless you have a predisposition.
There was a very interesting study done out of Stanford that followed runners for about 30 years. And it's not easy to do that, partly because a lot of people don't run for 30 years. And they started with runners in their 50s and 60s. And as I said, they followed them through 60 years. And what they found was the runners actually wound up with a lower incidence of knee arthritis than a matched group of similarly healthy people who didn't run. And so the evidence seems to be that if you're lucky enough to have made it into your 50s without knee arthritis, you can almost certainly keep running into your 90s, slower and slower. I could tell you, you get slower and slower, but it will not hurt your knees in general.
Is this true only of serious runners, people who run, I don't know, 30 to 50 miles a week? What about occasional runners? Do their knees also last longer, look better?
Well, I don't know if they look better. They tend to be knobbly as you get older, no matter what. But almost certainly any amount of running is likely to not hurt and may well be protective. And again, in the Stanford study, for instance, that 80 and 90-year-old runners were not running much, and they were probably really walking. And it may have been as little as 90 minutes over the course of a week, but their knees were healthier than similar people of the same age who didn't run. So you don't have to stop running to protect your knees.
You talked about having a healthier brain. It's one of the things that I read in your blog. There is evidence, I gather, that exercising, and I assume it's just exercising, not just running, exercising can actually increase brain cells?
It can. I must say it's the most encouraging bit of research that I have ever read. Is there's very clear evidence that exercising, and it does not have to be running, it does appear that it needs to be aerobic. There needs to be at least some movement of blood to the brain. But if you have even fairly low-level walking, what happens is you do get blood flow to the brain, you get various growth factors moving into the brain, and they have shown very clearly you get new brain cells growing as a result of the exercise. And that has a really strong impact, or appears to have a very strong impact, on cognitive ability. People who exercise do better on tests of cognition, of memory, they're less anxious. It's really quite profound.
It's astonishing. And there was another of your articles that suggested that people who exercise regularly actually look younger than people who don't.
Yes, my other particularly favorite area of research. Wonderful news for all of us who are growing a little older. They have studied the cells, of athletes. And every piece of your DNA has on the end of it this little cap that's called a telomere. And every time that cell, the DNA divides, a little tiny bit of the telomere is snipped away. And scientists think that that is protective. It's meant to protect the cell and the DNA. But what happens is if all of the telomere is snipped away, the cell itself and the DNA either dies or becomes sleepy. It essentially stops operating. So that cell is old. And when they studied the cells of aging athletes, athletes in their 50s and 60s who ran quite a bit, they were fairly serious runners, but they found their telomeres were at least 40% longer than those of age-matched people. They had younger cells, and that's pretty exciting.
There are a lot of things about this research that change the way we approach exercise, aren't there? There's, for instance, the whole business of running shoes, which is such a huge industry. There has been a lot of scientific study, or at least pseudo-scientific study, suggesting that people know what kind of shoes you should wear. But I'm gathering from looking at some of the research you've looked into, we may not know nearly as much as we thought we did.
No, and this is another instance where a certain mythology takes hold. And I've been a runner for decades now, and I have always been told and believed that you buy shoes based on the shape of your foot, whether you have a high arch or a low arch. And I've gone into running shoe stores, and they look at your foot. They even sometimes draw around your foot. And they tell you if you have a high arch, you need a very cushioned shoe because your foot will not bend as much. And if you have a very low arch, you need a really strong, sturdy motion control shoe. And those tend to be the heaviest shoes. They also recommend those frequently for heavier runners. And none of this was, in fact, based on good science. And when they actually started looking closely at whether putting people in shoes based on the shape of their foot actually reduced injury rate, it did not. And in some cases, it actually increased injury rate.
How much research has there really been done on this? I gather the U.S. military did some, and that's a lot of people anyway.
Yes, it's very large. It's certainly the largest study that's been done of running shoes, period. And most of the studies in the past that have been done have been quite small, and not to malign any researchers, but they've often been funded by running shoe companies. This case, the military set out to see whether assigning shoes based on the shape of your foot worked because they were doing it. They were putting quite a bit of money into it, and they wanted to know whether this money was being well spent. So they took a really large group of recruits, and as they were going into basic training, they either assigned them shoes based on whether they had a high arch, whether they were pronators or not, and they followed them through basic training when many people get injured. And they found that there was no difference whatsoever when they gave the people shoes based on the shape of their foot and when they gave them shoes almost completely at random. And probably, I don't want to make a blanket statement, but probably avoid the really heavy motion control shoes. Mm-hmm. They certainly, in all the studies that have been done recently, produced the highest injury rate.
Of course, the other hot topic these days is barefoot running. There's all sorts of attention being paid to that. Have you looked into that as well?
Well, I've certainly looked into the science of barefoot running, which is still pretty sketchy. And I know barefoot running is very popular. And when I wrote a column about it, we got a lot of comments, and people are very evangelical about it. And I've run barefoot, and it's fun. I will certainly say if you're running somewhere where there are no thorns, no glass, nothing that can hurt you, it can be fun. The science suggesting that it's the natural way to run is still sketchy. And there is some emerging evidence that if you've grown used to running in shoes, then your whole body adjusts to running in shoes. You are actually, you know, a shoed runner naturally at that point, when you take shoes off, you wind up frequently with a number of sore muscles and sometimes injuries. And it's not clear that it's the best way for everyone to run. It's certainly the best way for some people to run. If you want to do it gradually, do it slowly. Do not just throw your shoes away and run 10 miles.
One of the things that a lot of people have done to try to avoid injury in running and other sports is to stretch beforehand, to try to loosen up your muscles. Science suggests that may have been a mistake all these years, that stretching seems to feel good, but maybe the wrong thing to do exactly.
Yes, and that's another one of the really pervasive myths of exercise. If you go out to a youth soccer field on any Saturday morning, you'll see all the kids sitting on the ground, reaching for their toes and holding it. That's known as static stretching, where you hold a pose for at least 30 seconds or so. And most of us were taught that that's how you warm up. That's how you get ready for an exercise session. In fact, the science now shows that's exactly the wrong thing to do. What that does, it does not lengthen your muscles. It does not make them looser or more flexible. It actually causes a neuromuscular response, a response in both your brain and the muscle that tightens it up, that makes it harder to produce power because the brain thinks you're about to rip that muscle and it actually pulls it shorter so that it's protecting it. And they've done some very good studies showing that after people do static stretching, they can't jump as high and they can't run as fast. Stretching, by and large, will not increase the length of your muscles. That's pretty much genetically set. If you stretch, a group of scientists did a very interesting study of the muscles of a number of athletes, and they found that only athletes who stretched for hours a day over the course of months produced any permanent change in the length of any of their muscles. The rest of us, we're not doing anything when we stretch except possibly making ourselves feel a little better, but it's not going to decrease the incidence of injury. There's virtually no evidence that shows that. And static stretching, the reach for your toes and hold it before an exercise session, may well make you perform worse.
You know, the other thing about exercise these days is that everybody talks about what a great benefit is if you want to lose weight. It does seem as though exercise would be the silver bullet. There are even those who suggest that if you exercise, you continue to use up calories faster after you stop. Is any of that true? Does the science suggest that there is value, as one assumes, in exercise?
Yes and no. And I'm sorry to bring somewhat discouraging news, but exercise is not a magic bullet in terms of weight loss. And another myth that has been very pervasive about exercise is that if you go out and run moderately for 30 minutes, you will continue to burn lots of calories afterwards, that you have revved up your metabolism somehow. Well, they did a very elegant experiment at the University of Colorado in which they had people stay in a large room that is capable of measuring exactly how many calories you're burning and what percentage of them are fat and carbohydrates. Obviously, you want to burn more fat if you're trying to lose weight. And what they found was that after their volunteers rode a bike for 30 minutes, they not only didn't burn any more calories the remainder of the day, they actually burned less fat. So the lesson of that and the lesson of other very good science about exercise and weight loss is it still all comes down to calories in and calories out.
Well, thank you. It doesn't sound as though you are going to run out of science to examine, does it? This is getting bigger and bigger all the time.
Yes, and what's particularly interesting is that there's so many I guess you will call them myths that are entrenched about exercise. And a lot of them are only now being put to the test scientifically. And it'll be interesting to see how many of them stand the test and how many of them turned out to be purely myths.
Gretchen Reynolds writes the Phys Ed column for the New York Times Magazine.